I told you last week that we're going to begin a series through the Song of Solomon. I think it will take us about 10 weeks to get through the way that I have charted it out. We're certainly not going to go verse by verse. We're going to go big section by big section is the way that we're going to do this, all right? And when I started, I've read Song of Solomon, I don't know how many times, as I'm sure you have. And a few months ago, I was reading through it in my Bible reading, and it was just one of those books where I just went back and read it again and just started dwelling on it, thinking about it. And I wanted to preach through the Song of Solomon. Right now, I have more sermon series ideas in my head that I'm wanting to go through. In fact, I've got more sermon seed than I do sermon slots right now, and more sermons than I do time to put it together. But Song of Solomon is one of those books that I'm just intrigued with. And so I began to read, study, and man, read every commentator that I could find on it and just kind of get the consensus of the book. And this morning, here's what we're going to do. This morning is going to be the most boring lesson of the 10 weeks that we have. All right? I'm going to tell you that up front. I have to give you introduction. There is no way for me to start at chapter 1, verse 1, and just start making our way through it, because it will not make any sense. So though this will be the most boring, if you're interested in knowing what Song of Solomon is about, this will be the most important. Okay? So just give me some grace this morning. All right? I don't know if there is a more difficult book in the Bible to read than Song of Solomon. Because when you read it, there is not a clearly defined plot in the book. It is written in a strange Hebrew style of poetry that we really don't understand. There are no overly religious themes or theological themes in the book. And I'm going to tell you right up front, it contains some very erotic passages. There are some passages in the Song of Solomon that is embarrassing to read in public. It just is. One Jewish commentator said that Song of Solomon was like a door to which the key had been lost forever. He said there's no way to get inside the book. And because it's so difficult, it also is the most neglected. I asked several weeks ago, how many of you have ever heard the Song of Solomon preached through? And I think only 6 or 7 people raised their hand. Now, it's very telling to me that Bible commentators will treat Song of Solomon differently than any other book of the Bible. And here's what I mean. When I look at the book of Genesis, for example, when I look at Genesis, I look at it as a literal, factual, historical account of creation. That's the way I interpret that literally. In fact, I look at every book of the Bible that way. That is a literal story that's taken place. When you come to Song of Solomon, when I look at the Bible, the Bible's not a fairy tale. It is not a book of fables. It's not made up stories unless it's a parable and it's clearly marked as a parable. But even men who look at the Bible literally suddenly change their mind when they come to Song of Solomon. It is the one book for which there is no consensus on how do we treat this book. And when I began studying Song of Solomon in more depth, I was already familiar with the different interpretations, the different takes on the particular book. There are two main hypotheses to the plot of the book. We'll talk about that this morning. Are there three main characters? Are they two main characters? There is a shepherd and a Shulamite. There is Solomon. Is Solomon and the shepherd, are they the same? Is the Shulamite a real woman or is she just a figment of the imagination? All of those are consequential questions. And if you think there's three characters or two characters, leads you in two totally different directions. Is this a book about God's love for Israel? Or is it a book about Christ's love for the church? Or about neither, or about both. And I was familiar with all of the different takes, the different commentators. I knew what Phillips said about it. I knew what Charles Alexander said about it. I was familiar with that. And I finally had to get to the point where I had to say, all right, What is my take on the book? What makes sense to me? How do I see this book? And so here's what I'm going to give you. I'm going to give you my sense of the Song of Solomon. I'm going to give you other takes, and you may walk away and say, you know what? I believe there is a different interpretation to the book. We'll not break fellowship over it. I hope that we won't, all right? I won't break fellowship with you over it. I will tell you that the view that I take is a minority view. And I struggle with being a contrarian because I am not. But the view that I'm going to give you over the next few weeks has been gaining, I believe, ground, but it is not the historical interpretation. So let's get started in it, all right? Song of Solomon, chapter 1 and verse 1. The Song of Songs, which is Solomon's. That's as far as we'll get this morning. First of all, I want to talk to you about the interpretation of the book. The interpretation of the book. The first question that you ask when you approach any book of the Bible, especially Song of Solomon, is how is this book going to be interpreted? Now, the normal way to open up a Bible and to interpret any book of the Bible is by a literal, grammatical, historical, contextual hermeneutic. Now, that's a big seminary phrase, all right? Here's what it simply means. It simply means that the Bible is to be interpreted as plainly and as literally as can be allowed. We interpret it with the common use of grammar. When it says kiss, that means kiss, all right? We interpret it by the historical era in which it was set. We look at the original intent. We look at original audience. Somebody said that when the plain sense of the passage makes common sense, seek no other sense. That's a good rule of thumb. And I'm making a big deal out of this because commentators who believe that the Bible is to be interpreted literally suddenly adopt a different take when they come to this book. So the first debate is this a historical book? Can you apply this literally? Or is it just a made-up story to illustrate some greater spiritual truth? How are we going to interpret it? There are three schools of thought. Again, the most boring introduction, but I've got to get through this, all right? So stay with me Sunday morning. First of all, there is an allegorical interpretation. An allegory. It is a story or a poem or a picture that can be interpreted to reveal a hidden meaning. Now, this is very important. In an allegory, the events or the characters of that story may or may not be true. They may or may not be actual events or actual people. For example, how many of you have ever read The Pilgrim's Progress by John Bunyan? Anybody ever read that? That is an allegory. How many of you ever read Animal Farm by George Orwell? Anybody ever read that? All right. That is an allegory. Now, if you read Animal Farm, the first time I ever read Animal Farm, that story is about power hungry pigs that take over a farm and they use their new power to oppress all the other farm animals. Now, that's what the story is about. But that's not really what the story is about, right? That's not what it's about. That's a made-up story. It is an allegory. Actually, those power-hungry pigs are communist leaders who oppress their fellow countrymen. That farm is actually a country. So Animal Farm is not about animals and it's not about a farm. It's an allegory. It's a made-up story that symbolizes the communist leaders of the Soviet Union. That's what it's about. Now, to treat Song of Solomon as an allegory means that it doesn't matter if the story is true or not. It only means you're interested in the story behind the story, what it illustrates. The story is just a literary vehicle. That's all it is. What you're interested in is, what does it mean? When you read Pilgrim's Progress, you don't think that there was an actual character named Christian that went to all of those different places that's described in Pilgrim's Progress. You understand he's just an in-standing. He's just a character that John Bunyan created to tell a spiritual story. And so many commentators believe that Song of Solomon is an allegory. It is a story, and it's not important whether it's even true or not. All we're interested in is what is it supposed to represent. Now, the problem with treating Song of Solomon as an allegory is this. What is it an allegory of? When you read it, it sounds like a romantic story between two lovers. But if that's not what it is, then what is it? If you pick up a Jewish commentator that follows allegorical, here's what he says. He said it is about God's love for Israel. If you pick up a Christian commentator that follows allegorical, he said it is about Christ's love for the church. The Targums, that is Aramaic commentaries on the Hebrew Old Testament, their take was that Song of Solomon describes God's relationship to Israel all the way from the Exodus all the way to present day. Every commentator in my library believes that the book is primarily about Christ's love for the church. There was a guy, his name was Origen. If you've ever studied church fathers, there was a guy named Origen. Origen was the father of allegorizing the Bible. In fact, he believed the whole Bible was an allegory. When he came to Revelation, you know, Revelation talks about the coming of Christ and Christ setting up a millennial kingdom. I think he'll actually do that, all right? But Origen would look at Revelation, no, that's an allegory. That's not true. It's just representing something spiritual. And if you do that, then you become an amillennialist. You don't believe in a future literal coming of Christ or a coming kingdom. And Origen wrote a 10-volume commentary on the Song of Solomon, and he forced every detail to be a picture of Christ and the church. There was a guy in the 11th and 12th century, his name was Bernard. He was a French monk. And Bernard preached 86 sermons from chapter 1 and 2 of Song of Solomon. He was obsessed with allegorizing the Bible. So once you say, well, I think it's an allegory, then what is it an allegory of? And you can't guess. There's got to be a hidden meaning in the story. When you read Pilgrim's Progress, you know that the story behind the story is clear. Here's the reason why. You have men like Christian. You have men like Worldly Wise Man. You have men like Faithful. You have places like Slough of Despondency. You have places like the Celestial City and Doubting Castle. Those names are clues, they're hints that tells you what the story is about. But in Song of Solomon, there are no such hints. There is a way of Bible study that I really do not like, all right? And I hear this in preaching in some places that I go. That there are some guys that look at verse number 2. There are some guys, here's the way they've studied the Bible. Let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth, all right? Now next week we'll talk about kissing, okay? Because I think every marriage ought to have a lot of kissing, a lot of smooching, all right? And that's in the Bible. We'll talk about that next week. You've got to come back, all right? Because we're going to start talking about kissing. But there are some, I'm trying to keep you interested. There are some guys, here's the way they study the Bible. They look at the word kiss, then they look and see if they can find kiss anywhere else in the Bible. And if they can find kiss somewhere else in the Bible, then there has to be a connection between that too. I don't think so. All right? I don't know this connection. It's just talking about kissing right there is what it's talking about. And so when it says kisses of his mouth, I think she's talking about him kissing me with his mouth. I think that's what she's talking about. All right? If you want to read some ridiculous statements, you ought to read some of the details of guys that allegorize the Scripture. For example, verse 5. I am black but comely. Here's she speaking. Oh, ye daughters of Jerusalem. We'll find these daughters of Jerusalem several times in the book. And one commentator says, the daughters of Jerusalem are the professing church. Professing church. Well, how do you know that? Verse number 4, draw me, we will run after thee. Bernard, the guy that preached 86 sermons, he preached on the Exodus from Egypt. Right there. That's what he saw in verse number 4. Huh? Verse 12, while the king sitteth at his table, my spikenard sendeth forth the smell thereof. One commentator said that's the Holy Spirit. I read another one this week. He said, no, that's Jesus Christ. That's allegorizing. Oh, I'll give you one verse 13. a bundle of myrrh is my well-beloved unto me. He shall lie all night betwixt my breasts. One writer says that the two breasts are the Old Testament and the New Testament. I don't think that's what she's talking about. The problem with the allegory approach is, how do you know that's what it means? Where do you find that? Where did you come up with that? What tells you that that is what is being described? And the answer is, nothing tells you that. You have to make that up. There is no mention of God in Song of Solomon. The book is one of four in the Old Testament that is not quoted or referenced in the New Testament. There are no overtly doctrinal or religious themes in the book of Song of Solomon. And the only way to insert church doctrine into the book is to insert it into the book. Allegorical interpretation. Here's a second way, and that is typical interpretation. Now, I've got to hurry. A type may reach the same conclusion as an allegory, except it views the book as a historical account of actual persons and events. Allegory doesn't care and most likely doesn't believe that it is a true story. We're only interested in the story behind the story. Typology says, no, that is a true story, that is a true event. However, it is an illustration of a spiritual meaning. And so, Song of Solomon describes a romance between a shepherd and the Shulamite that really existed. That is a historical account. Typology says that literally happened. That is a true story. But the deeper meaning is relationship between Christ and the church. Now, I will tell you that I think that's a lot closer to the truth. Marriage itself is intended to represent our relationship with Christ. Is that not right? Ephesians chapter 5 tells us that. It is understandable then how Song of Solomon is seen as a picture of Christ and His church. However, I will say that making the story to be, here's a key word, primarily about Christ and His church, I believe, has some problems. Here's one of the problems. The shepherd loves the Shulamite because he finds her beautiful. He is enamored by her beauty. That is not why Christ loved me. He did not love me because I was beautiful. He loved me in spite of the lack of our beauty. He doesn't love the church because of our loveliness. He loves us in spite of the lack of our loveliness. So I don't see the type there. Now, let me point this out to you. There is a difference. Between a type being a true type and there just being parallels. I heard a man preach recently. He preached on the life of David. The life of David is a type of Christ, but not everywhere. In 1 Samuel chapter 11, David has adultery with Bathsheba. He's not a type of Christ there. All right? So he was preaching upon the life of David in an incident in David's life, and he was using every single detail, and he's finding a parallel. David rode on a donkey. He finds a parallel where Jesus rode on a donkey. And he's just finding parallels. So there's a difference between finding a parallel and it being an actual type. If I find bread in the Old Testament and I go to the New Testament and I read where Christ is the bread of life, that doesn't mean that this bread over here has anything to do with Christ being the bread of life. It's just a parallel. So here is the question. Was Solomon writing the Song of Solomon to be a type of Christ and the church? I'll show you a verse. Come to Hebrews chapter 9. Hold your finger here. Hebrews chapter 9. Hebrews chapter 9. Hebrews chapter 9, verse number 8, talking about the first tabernacle. Verse 9, which was a figure for the time then present. It is telling you that tabernacle was specifically meant to be a type of something greater. Look at verse number 24. For Christ has not entered into the holy places made with hands, which are the figures of the true, but into heaven itself. He's talking about the holy place, the holy of holies in that tabernacle, within that temple. And he says that it is a figure of the truth. So when you read that, it is telling you that the priesthood and the tabernacle and the sacrifices, all of that in the Old Testament was intentionally to be a type of Christ. So when I go back and I study that, that's the primary application. That's what I am looking for. I don't have to guess about it. The Bible is telling me that. But in the Song of Solomon, there is no indication of that. I can find parallels, and we will point out parallels, but to say that it is primarily about Christ and the church, I think is to insert that into the story. You can read typology into the text. I don't think that you draw typology out of the text. So there's allegory, there's typology. Here's the third, literal interpretation. It seeks to find in Song of Solomon the plainest sense possible. What is it about? Here's what it's about. Here's my thesis statement this morning. It is a celebration in poetic fashion of the bliss of romance and sexual love between a man and a woman in marriage. It is about marriage with all of its joys and with all of its challenges. The shepherd and the Shulamite fall in love with each other. They get married. That marriage is described sometimes in very frank language. It endorses the beauty and the purity of marital love. And in a day when the world has perverted marriage and intimacy, it is refreshing that God has something to say on the matter. For the next 10 weeks, we're going to talk about marriage. Marriage from the book. Interpretation of the book. Secondly, introduction to the book. Introduction to the book. Give it to you quickly. Introduction to the book, author and date. The author is Solomon. You find that in chapter 1 and verse number 1. The date is unknown. He's referred to as the king 6 times. So I believe that he was the king when he wrote this, sometime during his reign. He is the only person mentioned by name in the book. Author date. Characters. There are 2 characters that dominate the book. That is the shepherd and that is the Shulamite. You will also read about the daughters of Jerusalem. We'll talk about that. You also have Shulamite's brothers found in the 1st chapter and the last chapter, and we'll talk about them. Now, here's one of the mysteries. Who is the Shulamite? She is just called Shulamite, and she's never identified. So, commentators have all kinds of suggestions. Maybe she's Pharaoh's daughter. They've offered all kinds of suggestions. There's no evidence for who she is, so it's all guesses. I believe that the Shulamite was a maiden from Shunem, which was north, it was in North Galilee, all right? And it seems that her family is employed by Solomon to take care of his vineyards in that part of the country, and that they meet when he visits those vineyards. Here's another thought. Shulamite, in the Hebrew language, Shulamite is the feminine form of Solomon. And both names mean peaceful. So calling her Shulamite could be a way of calling her Mrs. Solomon. It's a way to think about it. Then the drama. The drama. In the Song of Solomon, there is a love story between 2 historical persons. But what is the plot? If I was to stand here this morning and tell you how I romanced my wife, all right, it would be a very humorous story to you. I was to tell you how we got engaged in a Chinese restaurant and how we went to Burger King afterwards because we were still hungry, didn't like Chinese food. And if I told you about us getting married in Parisburg and having to hurry because we weren't allowed to be out after dark and all this kind of stuff. It's how we had Oprah Winfrey at our wedding and all these things. All right, that's the plot. That's the plot. So what is the plot in Song of Solomon? I give this to you. And then I'll be done. There is a 3-character hypothesis. There is a 2-character hypothesis. All right? There was a German critical scholar in the 1800s, and here's what he said. He said that the Song of Solomon is like a love triangle of 3 characters. There is Solomon the king, there is a shepherd, and there is a Shulamite. Here's the plot. The Shulamite was in love with a common shepherd. But Solomon the king saw her. He is infatuated with her beauty. and he sought to add her to his growing harem of wives and concubines. She's taken to Jerusalem against her will, where Solomon tries to seduce her with all the luxuries of his palace. But even the wealth and splendor of being a queen could not steal her heart away from the shepherd that she truly loved. And so she resisted Solomon's advances until finally he allowed her to return home to marry her shepherd lover. What a wonderful story. Now that's romantic, isn't it? One commentator, Christian Ginsburg, here's what he said. He said, the song records the real history of a humble but virtuous woman who, after having been espoused to a man of like humble circumstances, had been tempted in a most alluring manner to abandon him and transfer her affections to one of the wisest and richest of men, but who successfully resisted all temptations, remaining faithful to her espousals and was ultimately rewarded for her virtue. That is the three character hypothesis. Solomon the shepherd and the Shulamite. Now, I have commentaries in my library. Dr. John Phillips, I love his books. That's the take that he takes. I have a couple of problems with it. For one, I have read, what I did is I took that hypothesis and I read through the Song of Solomon several times and I can't trace it. I can't figure out when Solomon is speaking, when is the shepherd speaking. Is this a good, I can't tell that. It makes Solomon a villain. And Solomon was a polygamist, but I don't want to make him worse than what the Bible does. And I cannot find evidence of a love triangle in Song of Solomon. And so I don't take that as the plot. There is a two-character hypothesis, and it is this. It is that Solomon fell in love with an unnamed Shulamite maiden when he's visiting the north country inspecting his vineyards. He's disguised first as a shepherd, but the romance grows. He eventually reveals himself as the king. Dr. Harry Ironside, probably one of the best commentators that I've read on Song of Solomon, here's how he plays out the story. He says, King Solomon had a vineyard in the hill country of Ephraim about 50 miles north of Jerusalem. He let it out to keepers consisting of a mother, two sons, and two daughters, the Shulamite and a little sister. The Shulamite was the Cinderella of the family, naturally beautiful but unnoticed. Her brothers were likely half-brothers. They made her work very hard tending the vineyard so that she had little opportunity to care for her personal appearance. She pruned the vines and set traps for the little foxes. She also kept the flocks. Being out in the open so much, she became sunburned. One day, a handsome stranger came to the vineyard. It was Solomon disguised. He showed an interest in her and she became embarrassed concerning her personal appearance. She took him for a shepherd and asked about his flocks. He answered evasively but also spoke loving words to her and promised rich gifts for the future. He won her heart and left with the promise that someday he would return. She dreamed of him at night and sometimes thought he was near. Finally, he did return in all his kingly splendor to make her his bride. I think that's the plot of the book. Now, when I read that to you, it should register in your mind, there's a parallel here. That is a parallel of what Jesus Christ did. When he came, robes of flesh, kingly glory disguised, won our hearts, wooing a bride, one day we'll return, full royal guard, take us as his bride. Well, there's a parallel there, isn't it? And you can preach that story. I want you to understand, you can preach that story from the Song of Solomon, but my primary application is about marriage. Now, here's the thing about it tonight, and I'm going to make this very clear, all right? You can take either one, the three-character, two-character, and you can interpret the book either way. And I have books in my library that takes the three characters and goes through all eight chapters with that as a love triangle. I take it as two characters. I believe that Solomon and the shepherd are the same. That's how it makes sense to me. That's how I'm going to preach it. That's the marriage that I'm going to describe to you. And I won't break fellowship with you if you say, no, I think there's a third guy here. I believe that Solomon is the shepherd. I believe it romances the Shulamite. I believe they get married. This book is about their marriage, their intimacy, their troubles, their faithfulness. Here's the big question. Big question. You've got 6 minutes. 6 minutes. Big question. Was Solomon qualified to write it? If you're going to find somebody to write about fidelity in marriage and true love, then why the man that had 300 wives and 700 concubines? Huh? That's a big question. And I can't know the answer for sure. It is possible. It is possible. And we'll deal with this when we get to chapter 6. It's possible that Solomon was not a polygamist when he wrote Song of Solomon. I don't know. It is possible the Shulamite was his first love. His first love. It's been suggested that that Song of Solomon was written by a younger Solomon. It depicts pure love, monogamous marriage. And then it's suggested that Proverbs is written in middle life, reflecting the wisdom Solomon gained through the maturity of years. And perhaps Ecclesiastes is written as an old man, from an old man's perspective, having pursued the vanities of life and realizing how foolish and empty that it was. We'll address polygamy as an issue when we get into the book, but it could be tonight or this morning, that Shulamite was his first love. And here's the thing about Solomon. Solomon was the wisest man who ever lived, right? Didn't follow most of his advice. A lot of the maxims that he writes in Proverbs, he didn't follow. One writer called him the wisest fool. But here's what you have to recognize. The Song of Solomon is written primarily by Solomon, is written by the Holy Spirit. He uses Solomon as a penman. And though Solomon violated almost every principle that he wrote about, he was still the man that the Holy Spirit chose to write three wisdom books of the Old Testament. And so I don't have a problem with Solomon, just like I don't have a problem with the Holy Spirit. Give you the outline. If you want to mark this down, I'll give you an assignment. I'll give you the outline. Mark this down. Here are the sections we're going to take. Chapter 1, verse 1 through chapter 3, verse 5. I'm going to call it courtship. It is falling in love. I believe it is her wedding day, and she's looking back at the courtship. We're going to talk about how to court your wife. All right? Chapter 3, verse 6 to chapter 5 and verse 1 is marriage. It is the fulfillment of love. By the way, I'm going to tell you now, there will come to some passages in this divinely inspired book that I'm going to read. And I'm going to say, whatever you think that means, that's what it means. Marriage, fulfillment of love. Chapter 5, verse 2. So chapter 6, verse 13, I'm going to call it struggling, frustrations of love. I think there's a conflict in the marriage. And then in chapter 7, verse 1, to the end of the book, I call it growing, faithfulness in love. When I settled on what I believe to be the primary intent of the book, I was surprised at how little had been written about it. Before I left, I went over to PCC. I use their library a lot. There are two rows of books on Song of Solomon. I looked at every one of them. Every one of them. And nearly everyone looks at it as an allegory or just a type. And it becomes ridiculous when everything has to fit into a prefabricated template. Do you remember verse 13 that we read? Verse 13? Do you remember we read that verse? One writer said that when she said, if I don't just come back and read it, when she said, "He shall lie all night betwixt my breasts," one writer said that is a reference to the Shekinah glory of God that rests between the two cherubims in the tabernacle. Huh? I don't think that's what she was thinking when she wrote that. No. Do you know what that means? Whatever you think it means. Some Bible students can't imagine that God would write a book on marital intimacy. And our culture has such a distorted view on sexuality, and the church is afraid to talk about it. There's a warped view of romance and marriage and relationships. Physical union is a wonderful thing within the bounds of marriage. And Satan will always try to distort that. Church history. Church history has revealed some very odd ideas about marital intimacy. Origen, the guy I told you about, Origen, he really practiced what he preached. He castrated himself. Jerome would throw himself into a thorny bush to get over his urges. Kind of a diversion. Augustine, the church father, the founder of Roman Catholicism, do you see where celibacy comes from? He believed that intimacy was okay between a man and woman as long as it is just for procreation. If there's pleasure involved, it becomes sin. That's a warped view is what it is. So we're going to cover Song of Solomon, I believe, in 10 lessons. We'll cover broad sections. I will not try to tell you what every detail is about because I do not know. There will be times I will say that whatever you think that means, that is what it means. Here is your assignment. It is to read Song of Solomon this week. 8 chapters, read it. Next week, we'll talk about courtship. And we begin with kissing because that's how the book begins.